Penguin Audio presents The Roald Dahl Audio Collection, featuring Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, James and the Giant Peach, Fantastic Mr. Fox, The Enormous Crocodile, and The Magic Finger. Written and read by Roald Dahl. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
In a small wooden house outside a large town, there lived a family of 7 people. The house was so small it had only 2 rooms, and the family was so poor they had only 1 bed between them all. The bed was given to the 4 old grandparents because they were so old and tired. They were so tired they never got out of it. Their names were Grandpa Joe and Grandma Josephine, and Grandpa George and Grandma Georgina. The 2 parents, who were called Mr. and Mrs. Bucket, slept on mattresses on the floor in the other room. So did their small son, whose name was Charlie Bucket, and he is the hero of this story. Mr. Bucket was the only person in the family with a job, but he was never able to make enough money to buy 1/2 of the things so large a family needed. The only meals they could afford were bread and margarine for breakfast, boiled potatoes and cabbage for lunch, and cabbage soup for supper. This wasn't nearly enough for a growing boy like Charlie. He desperately wanted something more filling and satisfying than cabbage and cabbage soup. The one thing he longed for more than anything else was chocolate. Walking to school in the mornings, Charlie could see great slabs of chocolate piled high in the shop windows, and he would stop and stare and press his nose against the glass, his mouth watering like mad. But the one awful thing that tortured little Charlie, the lover of chocolate, more than anything else, was this. In the town itself, actually within sight of the house in which Charlie lived, there was an enormous chocolate factory. This was Wonka's factory, owned by a man called Mr. Willy Wonka, the greatest inventor and maker of chocolates there has ever been. And what a tremendous, marvelous place it was. It had huge iron gates leading into it, and a high wall surrounding it, and smoke belching from its chimneys, and strange whizzing sounds coming from deep inside it. And outside the walls, for 1/2 mile around in every direction, the air was scented with a heavy, rich smell of melting chocolate. Oh, how he loved that smell. And oh, how he wished he could go inside the factory and see what it was like. In the evenings, after he had finished his supper of watery cabbage soup, Charlie always went into the room of his 4 grandparents to talk to them and to listen to their stories. One evening he said to them, "Is it really true that Wonka's chocolate factory is the biggest in the world?" "True," cried all 4 of them at once. "Of course it's true. Good heavens, didn't you know that? It's about 50 times as big as any other." "And is Mr. Willy Wonka really the cleverest chocolate maker in the world?" "My dear boy," said Grandpa Joe, raising himself up a little higher on his pillow, "Mr. Willy Wonka is the most amazing, the most fantastic, the most extraordinary chocolate maker the world has ever seen. I thought everybody knew that. You mean to say I've never told you about Mr. Willy Wonka and his factory?" "Never," answered little Charlie. "Mr. Willy Wonka can make marshmallows that taste of violets, and rich caramels that change color every 10 seconds as you suck them, and little feathery sweets that melt away deliciously the moment you put them between your lips. He can make chewing gum that never loses its taste, and candy balloons that you can blow up to enormous sizes before you pop them with a pin and gobble them up." "Is all this really true?" Charlie asked, "or are you pulling my leg?" "It's true," cried all 4 of the old people at once. "Ask anyone you like." "And I'll tell you something else that's true," said Grandpa Joe. And now he leaned closer to Charlie and lowered his voice to a soft, secret whisper. "Nobody ever comes out." "Out of where?" asked Charlie. "And nobody ever goes in." "In where?" cried Charlie. "Wonka's factory, of course." "Grandpa, what do you mean?" "I mean workers, Charlie. All factories have workers streaming in and out of the gates in the mornings and evenings, except Wonka's. Have you ever seen a single person going into that place? Or coming out?" "Not so very long ago," Grandpa Joe went on, "there used to be thousands of people working in Mr. Willy Wonka's factory. Then one day, all of a sudden, Mr. Wonka had to ask every single one of them to leave, to go home, never to come back." But why?" asked Charlie. "Because of spies. All the other chocolate makers had begun to grow jealous of the wonderful candies that Mr. Wonka was making, and they started sending in spies to steal his secret recipes. The spies took jobs in the Wonka factory, pretending they were ordinary workers. And while they were there, each one of them found out exactly how a certain special thing was made. And Mr. Willy Wonka tore his beard and shouted, "This is terrible! I shall be ruined! There are spies everywhere! I must close the factory!" So he shut the main gates and fastened them with a chain. And Wonka's giant chocolate factory became silent and deserted. Not a soul went in or out. And even Mr. Willy Wonka himself disappeared completely. Months and months went by, Grandpa Joe continued. But still the factory remained closed. Then something astonishing happened. One day, thin columns of white smoke were seen to be coming out of the tops of the tall chimneys of the factory. People in the town stopped and stared. "What's going on?" they cried. "Someone's lit the furnaces. Mr. Wonka must be opening up again." They ran to the gates, expecting to see them wide open and Mr. Wonka standing there to welcome his workers back. But no. The great iron gates were still locked and chained as securely as ever, and Mr. Wonka was nowhere to be seen. "But the factory is working," the people shouted. "Listen, you can hear the machines. They're all whirring again. And you can smell the smell of melting chocolate in the air." Grandpa Joe leaned forward and laid a long, bony finger on Charlie's knee. And he said softly, "But most mysterious of all, Charlie, were the shadows in the windows of the factory. The people standing on the street outside could see small, dark shadows moving about behind the frosted glass windows." "Shadows of whom?" "My dear boy," said Grandpa Joe, "that is one of the great mysteries of the chocolate-making world. We know only one thing about them. They are very small. The faint shadows that sometimes appear behind the windows, especially late in the night when the lights are on, are those of tiny people, people no taller than my knee." Just then, Mr. Bucket, Charlie's father, came into the room. He was home from work, and he was waving an evening newspaper rather excitedly. "Have you heard the news?" he cried. The headline said, "Wonka's factory to be opened at last to lucky few." "You mean people are actually going to be allowed to go inside the factory?" cried Grandpa Joe. "Read us what it says, quickly." "All right," said Mr. Bucket, smoothing out the newspaper. "Listen. Mr. Willy Wonka, the candy-making genius who nobody has seen for the last 10 years, sent out the following notice today. I, Willy Wonka, have decided to allow 5 children, just 5, mind you, and no more, to visit my factory this year. These lucky 5 will be shown around personally by me, and they will be allowed to see all the secrets and the magic of my factory. Then, at the end of the tour, as a special present, all of them will be given enough chocolates and candies to last them for the rest of their lives. So watch out for the golden tickets. 5 golden tickets have been printed on gold paper, and these 5 golden tickets have been hidden underneath the ordinary wrapping paper of 5 ordinary candy bars. These 5 candy bars may be anywhere. In any shop, in any street, in any town, in any country in the world. Upon any counter where Wonka's candies are sold. And the 5 lucky finders of these 5 golden tickets are the only ones who will be allowed to visit my factory and see what it's like now inside. Good luck to you all, and happy hunting. Signed, Willy Wonka." "Wouldn't it be something, Charlie," cried Grandpa Joe, "to open a bar of candy and see a golden ticket glistening inside?" "There isn't a hope," Charlie said sadly. "I only get 1 bar a year on my birthday." The very next day, the 1st golden ticket was found. The finder was a boy called Augustus Gloop, and Mr. Bucket's evening newspaper carried a large picture of him on the front page. The picture showed a 9-year-old boy who was so enormously fat he looked as though he had been blown up with a pump. "I just knew Augustus would find a golden ticket," his mother had told the newspaper men. "He eats so many candy bars a day that it was almost impossible for him not to find one. Eating is his hobby, you know. That's all he's interested in. What a thrill it will be for him to visit Mr. Wonka's marvelous factory. We're just as proud as can be." "What a revolting woman," said Grandma Josephine. "And what a repulsive boy," said Grandma Georgina. "Only 4 golden tickets left," said Grandpa George. "I wonder who'll get those." Suddenly, soon after that, the newspapers announced that the 2nd golden ticket had been found. The lucky person was a small girl called Veruca Salt, who lived with her rich parents in a great city far away. Veruca's father, Mr. Salt, had eagerly explained to the newspaper men exactly how the ticket was found. "You see," he said, "as soon as my little girl told me that she simply had to have one of those golden tickets, I went out into the town and started buying up all the Wonka candy bars I could lay my hands on. Thousands of them I must have bought. Hundreds of thousands. But 3 days went by, and we still hadn't found a golden ticket. Oh, it was terrible. My little Veruca got more and more upset each day, and every time I went home, she would scream at me, 'Where's my golden ticket? I want my golden ticket!' Well, sir, I just hated to see my little girl feeling unhappy like that, so I vowed I'd keep up the search until I'd got her what she wanted. Then suddenly, after I'd spent over $1 million on candy bars, I found a golden ticket. I rushed it home and gave it to my darling Veruca, and now she's all smiles and we have a happy home once again. That's even worse than the fat boy, said Grandma Josephine. Disgusting, said Grandma Georgina. Come to bed, my darling, said Charlie's mother. Tomorrow's your birthday, don't forget that, so I expect you'll be up early to open your present. A Wonka candy bar, said Charlie. It's a Wonka candy bar, isn't it? Yes, my love, his mother said. Of course it is. Oh, wouldn't it be wonderful if I found the third golden ticket inside it, Charlie said. Bring it in here when you get it, Grandpa Joe said. Then we can all watch you taking off the wrapper. Happy birthday, cried the four old grandparents as Charlie came into their room early next morning. Charlie smiled nervously and sat down on the edge of the bed. He was holding his only present very carefully in his two hands. Wonka's Whipple Scrumptious Fudge Mallow Delight, it said on the wrapper. The four old people, two at either end of the bed, propped themselves up on their pillows and stared with anxious eyes at the candy bar in Charlie's hands. Mr. and Mrs. Bucket came in and stood at the foot of the bed, watching Charlie. The room became silent. Everybody was waiting now for Charlie to start opening his present. They all knew it was ridiculous to expect this one poor little candy bar to have a magic ticket inside it, but there was one other thing that they also knew, and it was this, that however small the chance might be of striking lucky, the chance was there. Very slowly, Charlie's fingers began to tear open the small corner of the wrapping paper. The old people in the bed all leaned forward, craning their scraggy necks. Then suddenly, as though he couldn't bear the suspense any longer, Charlie tore the wrapper right down the middle, and onto his lap there fell a light brown, creamy-coloured chocolate candy bar. There was no sign of a golden ticket anywhere. That evening, Mr. Bucket's newspaper announced the finding of not only the third golden ticket, but the fourth as well. Two golden tickets found today, screamed the headlines. Only one more left. All right, said Grandpa Joe when the whole family was gathered in the old people's room after supper. Let's hear who found them. The third ticket, read Mr. Bucket, holding the newspaper up close to his face because his eyes were bad and he couldn't afford glasses. The third ticket was found by a Miss Violet Beauregard. There was great excitement in the Beauregard household when our reporter arrived to interview the lucky young lady. Cameras were clicking and flash bulbs were flashing and people were pushing and jostling and trying to get a bit closer to the famous girl. And the famous girl was standing on a chair in the living room, waving the golden ticket madly at arm's length, as though she were flagging a taxi. I'm a gum chewer, normally, she shouted, but when I heard about these ticket things of Mr. Wonka's, I laid off the gum and switched to candy bars in the hope of striking lucky. Now, of course, I'm right back on gum. I just adore gum. I can't do without it. I munch it all day long, except for a few minutes at mealtimes, when I take it out and stick it behind my ear for safekeeping. And now, she went on, it might interest you to know that this piece of gum I'm chewing right this moment is one I've been working on for over 3 months solid. That's a record, that is. It's beaten the record held by my best friend, Miss Cornelia Princemetal. Beastly girl, said Grandma Josephine. She'll come to a sticky end one day chewing all that gum. You see if she doesn't. And who got the fourth golden ticket, Daddy? Charlie asked. The fourth golden ticket, Mr. Bucket read out, was found by a boy called Mike TV. The TV household was crammed with excited visitors when our reporter arrived. But young Mike TV, the lucky winner, seemed extremely annoyed by the whole business. Can't you fools see I'm watching television, he said angrily. I wish you wouldn't interrupt. The 9-year-old boy was seated before an enormous television set, with his eyes glued to the screen, and he was watching a film in which one bunch of gangsters was shooting up another bunch of gangsters with machine guns. That's quite enough, snapped Grandma Josephine. I can't bear to listen to it. Nor me, said Grandma Georgina. And now there's only one ticket left, said Grandpa George. During the next 2 weeks, the weather turned very cold. Inside the Bucket's house, little jets of freezing air came rushing in through the sides of the windows and under the doors. Nobody in the family gave a thought now to anything except trying to keep warm and trying to get enough to eat. Then all at once, the meals became thinner than ever. The reason for this was that Mr. Bucket lost his job. Quickly, he tried to get another, but he had no luck. In the end, the only way in which he managed to earn a few pennies was by shoveling snow in the streets. Slowly but surely, everybody in the house began to starve. And every day, little Charlie Bucket, trudging through the snow on his way to school, would have to pass Mr. Willy Wonka's giant chocolate factory. And every day as he came near it, He would lift his small, pointed nose high in the air and sniff the wonderful sweet smell of melting chocolate. Then one afternoon, walking back home with the icy wind in his face and feeling hungrier than he had ever felt before, his eye was caught suddenly by a piece of paper that was lying in the gutter in the snow. The paper was of a greenish colour. It was a dollar bill. Quickly he looked around him. Had somebody just dropped it? No, that was impossible because of the way part of it was buried. Carefully, Charlie pulled it out from under the snow. It was damp and dirty, but otherwise perfect. A whole dollar. He held it tightly between his shivering fingers. It meant one thing to him at that moment. It meant food. Automatically, Charlie turned and began moving toward the nearest shop. It was only 10 paces away. It was a newspaper and stationery store, the kind that sells almost everything. And what he would do, he whispered to himself, he would buy one luscious bar of candy and eat it all up, every bit of it, right then and there, and the rest of the money he would take straight back home and give to his mother. Charlie entered the store and laid the damp dollar bill on the counter. One Wonka's Whipple Scrumptious Fudge Mallow Delight, he said, remembering how much he had loved the one he had had on his birthday. The fat man behind the counter turned and reached for the candy bar and handed it to Charlie. Charlie grabbed it and quickly tore off the wrapper and took an enormous bite. Then he took another and another, and oh, the joy of being able to cram large pieces of something sweet and solid into one's mouth. He couldn't stop, and in less than half a minute the whole thing had disappeared down his throat. He was quite out of breath, but he felt marvelously, extraordinarily happy. He reached out a hand to take the change. Then he paused. Surely it wouldn't matter if he spent just one more dime. I think, he said quietly, I think I'll just have one more of those candy bars. The same kind as before, please. Why not, the fat shopkeeper said, reaching behind him again and taking another Whipple Scrumptious Fudge Mallow Delight from the shelf. He laid it on the counter. Charlie picked it up and tore off the wrapper. And suddenly, from underneath the wrapper, there came a brilliant flash of gold. Charlie's heart stood still. It's a golden ticket, screamed the shopkeeper, leaping about a foot in the air. You've got a golden ticket. You've found the last golden ticket. Hey, what do you know? Come and look at this, everybody. The kid's found Wonka's last golden ticket. There it is. It's right there in his hands. It seemed as though the shopkeeper might be going to have a fit. In my shop, too, he yelled. He found it right here in my own little shop. Somebody call the newspapers. Watch out now, sonny. Don't tear it as you unwrap it. That thing's precious. Take it straight home quickly before you lose it. Run all the way and don't stop till you get there, you understand? And 5 minutes later, he arrived at his own home. He burst in through the front door shouting, Mother! 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 Mrs. Bucket was in the old grandparents' room serving them their evening soup. Mother! Charlie yelled, rushing in on them like a hurricane. Look! I've got it! Look, Mother, look! The last golden ticket! It's mine! I found some money in the street and I bought 2 candy bars and the second one had the golden ticket and there were crowds of people all around me wanting to see it. It's the 5th golden ticket, Mother, and I've found it. For about 10 seconds, there was absolute silence in the room. Nobody dared to speak or move. It was a magic moment. Then very softly, Grandpa Joe said, You're pulling our legs, Charlie, aren't you? You're having a little joke. I am not, cried Charlie, rushing up to the bed and holding out the large and beautiful golden ticket for him to see. Grandpa Joe leaned forward and took a close look, his nose almost touching the ticket. The others watched him, waiting for the verdict. Then very slowly, with a slow and marvelous grin spreading all over his face, Grandpa Joe lifted his head and looked straight at Charlie. The color was rushing to his cheeks, and his eyes were shining with joy, and suddenly the old man took a deep breath and with no warning whatsoever, an explosion seemed to take place inside him. He threw up his arms and yelled, Yippee! At this point, the door opened and Mr. Bucket walked into the room. He was cold and tired, and he looked it. All day long he had been shoveling snow in the streets. Cripes, he said, what's going on in here? It didn't take them long to tell him what had happened. I don't believe it, he said, it's not possible. Show him the ticket, Charlie. Let me see it, Charlie, Mr. Bucket said, collapsing into a chair and holding out his hand. Charlie came forward with the precious document. On one side of it was printed the invitation itself from Mr. Wonka. Read it aloud, cried Grandpa Joe, climbing back into his bed again at last. Greetings to you, the lucky finder of this golden ticket from Mr. Willy Wonka. I shake you warmly by the hand. Tremendous things are in store for you. Many wonderful surprises await you. For now I do invite you to come to my factory and be my guest for one whole day. I, Willy Wonka, will conduct you around the factory myself, showing you everything that there is to see, and afterwards you will be escorted home by a procession of large trucks. These trucks will be loaded with enough delicious eatables to last you and your entire household for the rest of your lives. But this is by no means the most exciting thing that will happen on the day of your visit. In your wildest dreams, you could not imagine such goings-on. Just you wait and see. And now, here are your instructions. The day I have chosen for the visit is the first day in the month of February. On this day and on no other, you must come to the factory gates at 10 o'clock sharp in the morning. And you are allowed to bring with you either one or two members of your own family to look after you. And don't forget to bring this ticket, otherwise you will not be let in. Signed, Willy Wonka. The first day of February, cried Mrs. Bucket, but that's tomorrow. You're just in time, shouted Grandpa Joe. There's not a moment to lose. You must start making preparations at once. Wash your face, comb your hair, scrub your hands, brush your teeth, blow your nose, cut your nails, polish your shoes, iron your shirt, and for heaven's sake, get all that mud off your pants. You must get ready, my boy. You must get ready for the biggest day of your life. Now, don't overexcite yourself, Grandpa, Mrs. Bucket said, and don't fluster poor Charlie. Now, the first thing to decide is this. Who is going to go with him to the factory? I will, shouted Grandpa Joe, leaping out of bed once again. I'll take him. I'll look after him. You leave it to me. Are you sure you feel well enough? Asked Mr. Bucket. Of course I feel well enough, cried Grandpa Joe, seizing Charlie by the hands and dancing round the room. Yippee, he shouted. We're off to Wonka's. We're off to visit Wonka's in the morning. The sun was shining brightly on the morning of the big day. And outside the gates of Wonka's factory, enormous crowds of people had gathered to watch the five lucky ticket holders going in. Right beside the gates, in a small group that was carefully shielded from the crowds by the police, stood the five famous children, together with the grown-ups who had come with them. The tall, bony old figure of Grandpa Joe could be seen standing quietly among them, and beside him, holding tightly onto his hand, was little Charlie Bucket himself. The four other children all had both their mothers and fathers with them. Somewhere in the distance, a church clock began striking 10. Very slowly, with a loud creaking of rusty hinges, the great iron gates of the factory began to swing open. The crowd became suddenly silent. All eyes were fixed upon the gates. There he is, somebody shouted. That's him. And so it was. Mr. Wonka was standing all alone just inside the gates of the factory. And what an extraordinary little man he was. He had a black top hat on his head. He wore a tailcoat made of beautiful plum-coloured velvet. His trousers were bottle green, his gloves were pearly grey, and in one hand he carried a fine gold-topped walking cane. Covering his chin there was a small, neat, pointed black beard. And his eyes were most marvellously bright. They seemed to be sparkling and twinkling at you all the time. The whole face, in fact, was alight with fun and laughter. "Welcome, my little friends," he called out. "Welcome to the factory. Will you come forward one at a time, please, and show me your golden ticket? Who's first?" A big fat boy stepped up. "I'm Augustus Gloop," he said. "Augustus," cried Mr. Wonka, seizing his hand and pumping it up and down with terrific force. "My dear boy, how good to see you. Delighted, charmed, overjoyed to have you with us. And Mr. Gloop and Mrs. Gloop, how do you do? Step right through the gates." Mr. Wonka was clearly just as excited as everybody else. "My name," said the next child to go forward, "is Veruca Salt." "My dear Veruca, what a pleasure this is. How pretty you look in that lovely mink coat. I'm so glad you could come. And this is your father? How are you, Mr. Salt? And Mrs. Salt, overjoyed to see you. Yes, the ticket is quite in order. Please go in." The next two children, Violet Beauregard and Mike TV, came forward with their mothers and fathers and were greeted enthusiastically by Mr. Wonka. And last of all, a small, nervous voice whispered, "Charlie Bucket." "Charlie," cried Mr. Wonka, "well, well, well, so there you are. You're the one who found your ticket only yesterday, aren't you? Yes, yes, I read all about it in this morning's papers. Just in time, my dear boy. I'm so glad, so happy for you. And this, your grandfather? Delighted to meet you, sir. Overjoyed, enraptured, enchanted. All right. Is everybody in now? Good. Please follow me. Our tour is about to begin. But do keep together. Please don't wander off by yourselves. I shouldn't like to lose any of you at this stage of the proceedings. Oh, dear me, no." Soon, they were all standing in a long corridor that stretched away in front of them as far as they could see. "Come on," cried Mr. Wonka. "Get a move on, please. We'll never get round today if you dawdle like this." Suddenly, Mr. Wonka stopped. In front of him, there was a shiny metal door. The party crowded round. On the door, in large letters, it said, "The Chocolate Room." "An important room, this," cried Mr. Wonka, taking a bunch of keys from his pocket and slipping one into the keyhole of the door. "This is the nerve center of the whole factory." Mr. Wonka opened the door. Five children and nine grown-ups pushed their ways in. And oh, what an amazing sight it was that now met their eyes. They were looking down upon a lovely valley. There were green meadows on either side of the valley, and along the bottom of it there flowed a great brown river. What is more, there was a tremendous waterfall halfway along the river, a steep cliff over which the water curled and rolled in a solid sheet, and then went crashing down into a boiling, churning whirlpool of froth and spray. Below the waterfall, and this was the most astonishing sight of all, a whole mass of enormous glass pipes were dangling down into the river from somewhere high up in the ceiling. They really were enormous, those pipes, and they were sucking up the brownish, muddy water from the river and carrying it away to goodness knows where. "There we are," cried Mr. Wonka, dancing up and down and pointing his gold-topped cane at the great brown river. "It's all chocolate. Every drop of that river is hot, melted chocolate of the finest quality. The very finest quality. There's enough chocolate in there to fill every bathtub in the entire country, and all the swimming pools as well. Isn't it terrific? And just look at my pipes. They suck up the chocolate and carry it away to all the other rooms in the factory where it is needed. Thousands of gallons an hour, my dear children. Thousands and thousands of gallons." The children and their parents were too flabbergasted to speak. They simply stood and stared. Suddenly the air was filled with screams of excitement. The screams came from Veruca Salt. She was pointing frantically to the other side of the river. "Look, look over there," she screamed. "What is it? He's moving, he's walking, it's a little person, it's a little man, down there below the waterfall." Everybody stopped picking buttercups and stared across the river. "She's right, Grandpa," cried Charlie. "It is a little man. Can you see him?" "I see him, Charlie," said Grandpa Joe excitedly. And now everybody started shouting at once. "There's lots of them. What are they doing? Where do they come from? Who are they?" Children and parents alike rushed down to the edge of the river to get a closer look. "Aren't they fantastic? Look at their funny long hair." "But they can't be real people," Charlie said. "Of course they're real people," Mr. Wonka answered. "They're Oompa Loompas." "Oompa Loompas," everyone said at once. "Oompa Loompas." "Imported direct from Loompaland," said Mr. Wonka proudly. "There's no such place," said Mrs. Salt. "Excuse me, dear lady, but..." "Mr. Wonka," cried Mrs. Salt, "I am a teacher of geography." "Then you'll know all about it," said Mr. Wonka. "And oh, what a terrible country Loompaland is. Nothing but thick jungles infested by the most dangerous beasts in the world. Horn swogglers and snozwangers and those terrible wicked wangdoodles. A wangdoodle would eat 10 Oompa Loompas for breakfast and come galloping back for a second helping. When I went out there, I found the little Oompa Loompas living in tree houses to escape from the wangdoodles and the horn swogglers and the snozwangers. Hundreds of them were being eaten alive every day. Come with me, I said. Come and live in my factory where we will all be safe and happy. And that is what they did. They are lovely people and marvellous workers. They dance and sing. Augustus, shouted Mrs. Gloop. Augustus, sweetheart, I don't think you had better do that. Augustus Gloop, the big fat boy, had quietly sneaked down to the edge of the river, and he was now kneeling on the riverbank, scooping hot melted chocolate into his mouth as fast as he could. Augustus, cried Mrs. Gloop. Augustus, cried Mr. Gloop. But Augustus was deaf to everything except the call of his enormous stomach. He was now lying full length on the ground with his head far out over the river, lapping up the chocolate like a dog. Be careful, Augustus, shouted Mr. Gloop. You're leaning too far out. Suddenly there was a shriek, and then a splash, and into the river went Augustus Gloop, and in one second he had disappeared under the brown surface. Save him, screamed Mrs. Gloop, going white in the face and waving her umbrella. He'll drown. He can't swim a yard. Good heavens, woman, said Mr. Gloop. I'm not diving in there. I've got my best suit on. Augustus Gloop's face came up again to the surface, painted brown with chocolate. Help, 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 he yelled. Fish me out. But already it was too late. Very quickly, the wretched boy was being sucked toward the mouth of one of the great pipes dangling down into the river. Then all at once the powerful suction took hold of him completely, and he was pulled under the surface, and then into the mouth of the pipe. The crowd on the riverbank waited breathlessly to see where he would come out. There he goes, somebody shouted, pointing upwards. And sure enough, because the pipe was made of glass, Augustus Gloop could be clearly seen shooting up inside it head first like a torpedo. Help! Murder! Police! Screamed Mrs. Gloop. Augustus, come back at once. Where are you going? Woof! Up he shot like a bullet in the barrel of a gun. He's disappeared, yelled Mrs. Gloop. Where does that pipe go to? Quick, call the fire brigade. Keep calm, said Mr. Wonka. Keep calm, my dear lady, keep calm. There is no danger. Augustus has gone on a little journey, that's all. My poor Augustus! They'll be selling him by the pound all over the country tomorrow morning. I wouldn't allow it, cried Mr. Wonka. The taste would be terrible. Just imagine it, Augustus-flavoured, chocolate-coated gloop, no one would buy it. But do keep calm, dear lady. Your darling boy will be perfectly safe. If he's perfectly safe, then where is he? Snapped Mrs. Gloop. Lead me to him this instant. Mr. Wonka turned around and clicked his fingers sharply, click, 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 three times. Immediately, an Oompa Loompa appeared, as if from nowhere, and stood beside him. Now listen to me, said Mr. Wonka, looking down at the tiny man. I want you to take Mr. and Mrs. Gloop up to the fudge room and help them find their son Augustus. He's just gone up the pipe. The Oompa Loompa took one look at Mrs. Gloop and exploded into peals of laughter. Oh, do be quiet, said Mr. Wonka. Control yourself. Mrs. Gloop doesn't think it's at all funny. You can say that again, said Mrs. Gloop. Go straight to the fudge room, said Mr. Wonka, to the Oompa Loompa, and when you get there, take a long stick and start poking around inside the big chocolate mixing barrel. Forgive me. I'm so sorry. Goodbye, Mrs. Gloop. And Mr. Gloop. Goodbye, goodbye. I'll see you later. As Mr. and Mrs. Gloop and their tiny escort hurried away, the Oompa Loompas on the far side of the river suddenly began hopping and dancing about and beating wildly upon a number of very small drums. Augustus Gloop, they chanted. Augustus Gloop. Grandpa, cried Charlie. What are they doing? Shh, whispered Grandpa Joe. I think they're going to sing. Augustus Gloop, chanted the Oompa Loompas. Augustus Gloop, Augustus Gloop, the great big greedy nincompoop. How long could we allow this beast to gorge and guzzle, feed and feast on everything he wanted to? Great Scott, it simply wouldn't do. However long this pig might live, we're positive he'd never give even the smallest bit of fun or happiness to anyone. Come on, we cried, the time is ripe to send him shooting up the pipe. He has to go, it has to be, and very soon he's going to see inside the room to which he's gone some funny things are going on. But don't, dear children, be alarmed. Augustus Gloop will not be harmed, although, of course, we must admit he will be altered quite a bit. He'll be quite changed from what he's been when he goes through the fudge machine. Slowly the wheels go round and round, the cogs begin to grind and pound. 100 knives go slice, slice, slice. We add some sugar, cream and spice. We boil him for a minute more until we're absolutely sure that all the greed and all the gall is boiled away for once and all. Then out he comes, and now, by grace, a miracle has taken place. This boy, who only just before was loathed by men from shore to shore, this greedy brute, this louse's ear, is loved by people everywhere. For who could hate or bear a grudge against a luscious bit of fudge? I told you they loved singing, said Mr. Wonka. Aren't they delightful? Aren't they charming? But you mustn't believe a word they said. It's all nonsense, every bit of it. Hurry up, everybody. We shall have to make the next part of the journey by boat. Here she comes. Look. A steamy mist was rising up now from the great warm chocolate river, and out of the mist there appeared suddenly a most fantastic pink boat. There were many oars on either side of it, and as the boat came closer, the watchers on the river bank could see that the oars were being pulled by masses of Oompa Loompas, at least 10 of them to each oar. This is my private yacht, cried Mr. Wonka, beaming with pleasure. I made her by hollowing out an enormous boiled sweet. Isn't she beautiful? As soon as everybody was safely in, the Oompa Loompas pushed the boat away from the bank and began to row swiftly down the river. Charlie was holding tightly onto his grandfather's bony old hand. He was in a whirl of excitement. Everything that he had seen so far, the great chocolate river, the waterfall, the huge sucking pipes, the Oompa Loompas, the beautiful pink boat, and most of all Mr. Willy Wonka himself, had been so astonishing that he began to wonder whether there could possibly be any more astonishments left. The boat sped on down the river. The river was getting narrower. There was some kind of a dark tunnel ahead, a great round tunnel that looked like an enormous pipe, and the river was running right into the tunnel, and so was the boat. Row on, shouted Mr. Wonka, jumping up and waving his stick in the air. Full speed ahead! And with the Oompa Loompas rowing faster than ever, the boat shot into the pitch-dark tunnel, and all the passengers screamed with fright. How can they see where they're going? Shrieked Violet Beauregard in the darkness. There's no knowing where we're going, cried Mr. Wonka, hooting with laughter. There's no earthly way of knowing which direction we are going. There's no knowing where they're rowing, or which way the river's flowing. Not a speck of light is showing, so the danger must be growing, for the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs that they're slowing. He's gone off his rocker, shouted one of the fathers, aghast. And the other parents joined in the chorus of frightened shouting. He's crazy, they shouted. He's balmy, he's nutty, he's screwy, he's batty. Switch on the lights, shouted Mr. Wonka. And suddenly on came the lights, and the whole tunnel was brilliantly lit up. Ahead of them, Charlie could see a bright red door in the wall of the tunnel. Stop the boat, ordered Mr. Wonka. The Oompa Loompas jammed their oars into the river and backed water furiously. The boat stopped. They guided the boat alongside the red door. On the door it said, Inventing Room, Private. Keep out. Mr. Wonka took a key from his pocket, leaned over the side of the boat, and put the key in the keyhole. This is the most important room in the entire factory, he said. All my most secret new inventions are cooking and simmering in here. Old Fickle Gruber would give his front teeth to be allowed inside just for 3 minutes. So would Prodnose and Slugworth and all the other rotten chocolate makers. He opened the door and stepped out of the boat into the room. The four remaining children and their parents all scrambled after him. Don't touch, shouted Mr. Wonka, and don't knock anything over. Charlie Bucket stared around the gigantic room in which he now found himself. The place was like a witch's kitchen. Mr. Wonka had suddenly become even more excited than usual, and anyone could see that this was the room he loved best of all. He was hopping about among the saucepans and the machines like a child among his Christmas presents. Then he ran over to another machine, a small, shiny affair that kept going, fut, 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 and every time it went, fut, a large green marble dropped out of it into a basket on the floor. At least it looked like a marble. Everlasting gobstoppers, cried Mr. Wonka proudly. They're completely new. I'm inventing them for children who are given very little pocket money. You can put an everlasting gobstopper in your mouth and you can suck it and suck it and suck it and it will never get any smaller. Now Mr. Wonka led the party over to a gigantic machine that stood in the very centre of the inventing room. Here we go, cried Mr. Wonka. And he pressed three different buttons on the side of the machine. A second later, a mighty rumbling sound came from inside it, and the whole machine began to shake most frighteningly, and steam began hissing out of it all over. And then runny stuff came pouring down the insides of all the hundreds of little glass tubes and squirting out into a great tub below. And when the tub was nearly full, Mr. Wonka pressed another button, and immediately the runny stuff stopped running out of the tubes. The rumbling sound disappeared, and a whizzing, whirring noise took its place. And then a giant whizzer started whizzing around inside the enormous tub, mixing up all the different liquids like an ice cream soda. Watch, said Mr. Wonka. Suddenly, the machine let out a monstrous, mighty groan, and at the same moment, a tiny drawer popped out of the side of the machine. And in the drawer there lay something so small and thin and grey that everyone thought it must be a mistake. The thing looked like a little strip of grey cardboard. The children and their parents stared at the little grey strip lying in the drawer. You mean that's all? Said Mike TV, disgusted. That's all, answered Mr. Wonka, gazing proudly at the result. Don't you know what it is? There was a pause. Then suddenly Violet Beauregard, the goofy gum-chewing girl, let out a yell of excitement. By gum, it's gum, she shrieked. It's a stick of chewing gum. Right you are, cried Mr. Wonka, slapping Violet hard on the back. It's a stick of gum. It's a stick of the most amazing and fabulous gum in the world. It's a whole three-course dinner all by itself. This piece of gum I've just made happens to be tomato soup, roast beef, and blueberry pie. But you can have almost anything you want. What do you mean it's tomato soup, roast beef, and blueberry pie, said Violet Beauregard. If you were to start chewing it, said Mr. Wonka, then that is exactly what you would get on the menu. It's absolutely amazing. You can actually feel the food going down your throat and into your tummy, and you can taste it perfectly. And it fills you up. It satisfies you. It's terrific. It's utterly impossible, said Veruca Salt. Just so long as it's gum, shouted Violet Beauregard, just so long as it's a piece of gum and I can chew it, then that's for me. And quickly she took her own world record piece of chewing gum out of her mouth and stuck it behind her left ear. Come on, Mr. Wonka, she said, hand over this magic gum of yours and we'll see if the thing works. I would rather you didn't take it, Mr. Wonka told her gently. You see, I haven't got it quite right yet. There are still one or two things. Oh, to heck with that, said Violet, and suddenly, before Mr. Wonka could stop her, she shot out a fat hand and grabbed the stick of gum out of the little drawer and popped it into her mouth. At once, her huge, well-trained jaws started chewing away on it like a pair of tongs. Don't, said Mr. Wonka. Fabulous, shouted Violet. It's tomato soup. It's hot and creamy and delicious. I can feel it running down my throat. Stop, said Mr. Wonka. The gum isn't ready yet. It's not right. Of course it's right, said Violet. It's working beautifully. Oh, my, what lovely soup this is. Spit it out, said Mr. Wonka. It's changing, shouted Violet, chewing and grinning both at the same time. The second course is coming up. It's roast beef. It's tender and juicy. Oh, boy, what a flavour. The baked potato is marvellous, too. It's got a crispy skin, and it's all filled with butter inside. Mr. Wonka was wringing his hands and saying, No, 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 no. It isn't ready for eating. It isn't right. You mustn't do it. Blueberry pie and cream, shouted Violet. Here it comes. Oh, my, it's perfect. It's beautiful. It's the most marvellous blueberry pie in the world. Good heavens, girl, shrieked Mrs. Beauregard, what's happening to your nose? It's turning blue. It's turning blue as a blueberry. Your mother is right, shouted Mr. Beauregard. Your whole nose has gone purple. What do you mean, said Violet, still chewing away. Your cheeks, screamed Mrs. Beauregard. They're turning blue as well. So is your chin. Your whole face is turning blue. It always goes wrong when we come to the dessert, sighed Mr. Wonka. It's the blueberry pie that does it. But I'll get it right one day. You wait and see. Violet, screamed Mrs. Beauregard, you're swelling up. Like a blueberry, said Mr. Wonka. Save her, cried Mrs. Beauregard, wringing her hands. But there was no saving her now. Her body was swelling up and changing shape at such a rate that within a minute it turned into nothing less than an enormous round blue ball. A gigantic blueberry, in fact. And all that remained of Violet Beauregard herself was a tiny pair of arms sticking out of the great round fruit and a little head on top. I've got a blueberry for a daughter, wailed Mrs. Beauregard. Put her back to what she was this instant. Mr. Wonka clicked his fingers, and 10 Oompa Loompas appeared immediately at his side. "Roll Miss Beauregard into the boat," he said to them, "and take her along to the juicing room at once." "The juicing room?" cried Mrs. Beauregard. "What will they do to her?" "Squeeze her," said Mr. Wonka. "We've got to squeeze the juice out of her immediately. After that, we'll just have to see how she comes out. I am sorry about it all, I really am." Already the 10 Oompa Loompas were rolling the enormous blueberry across the floor. Mr. and Mrs. Beauregard hurried after them. "Listen," whispered Charlie. "Listen, Grandpa. The Oompa Loompas in the boat outside are starting to sing again." The voices, 100 of them singing together, came loud and clear into the room. "Dear friends, we surely all agree there's almost nothing worse to see than some repulsive little bum who's always chewing gum. It's very near as bad as those who sit around and pick the nose. So please believe us when we say that chewing gum will never pay. This sticky habit's bound to send the chewer to a sticky end. Did any of you ever know a person called Miss Bigelow? This dreadful woman saw no wrong in chewing all day long. She chewed while bathing in the tub. She chewed while dancing at her club. She chewed in church and on the bus. It really was quite ludicrous. And when she couldn't find her gum, she'd chew up the linoleum or anything that happened there, a pair of boots, the postman's ear, or other people's underclothes, and once she chewed her boyfriend's nose. She went on chewing till at last her chewing muscles grew so vast that from her face her giant chin stuck out just like a violin. For years and years she chewed away, consuming 50 packs a day, until one summer's eve, alas, a horrid business came to pass. Miss Bigelow went late to bed. For half an hour she lay in red, chewing and chewing all the while like some great clockwork crocodile. At last she put her gum away upon a special little tray and settled back and went to sleep. She managed this by counting sheep. But now, how strange, although she slept, those massive jaws of hers still kept on chewing through the night, even with nothing there to bite. They were, you see, in such a groove they positively had to move. And very grim it was to hear, in pitchy darkness, loud and clear, this sleeping woman's great big trap opening and shutting, snap, snap, snap. Faster and faster, chop, 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 the noise went on, it wouldn't stop, until at last her jaws decided to pause and open extra wide, and with the most tremendous chew, they bit the lady's tongue in two. Thereafter, just from chewing gum, Miss Bigelow was always dumb and spent her life shut up in some disgusting sanatorium. And that is why we'll try so hard to save Miss Violet Beauregard from suffering an equal fate. She is still quite young. It's not too late, provided she survives the cure. We hope she does. We can't be sure. "Follow me," cried Mr. Wonka. They were now in another of those long corridors. "Press on," cried Mr. Wonka. "No time for messing about," and on he rushed with his black top hat perched on the top of his head and his plum-coloured velvet coat-tails flying out behind him. They passed a door in the wall. They passed another door. Then another and another. "The nut room," it said on the next door. "All right," said Mr. Wonka. "Stop here for a moment and take a peep through the glass panel of this door. But don't go in. Whatever you do, don't go into the nut room or you'll disturb the squirrels." Everyone crowded around the door. It was an amazing sight. 100 squirrels were seated upon high stools around a large table. On the table, there were mounds and mounds of walnuts, and the squirrels were all working away like mad, shelling the walnuts at a tremendous speed. "These squirrels are specially trained for getting the nuts out of walnuts," Mr. Wonka explained. "See how they first tap each walnut with their knuckles to be sure it's not a bad one. If it's bad, it makes a hollow sound, and they just throw it down the garbage chute. There, look, watch that squirrel nearest to us. I think he's got a bad one now." They watched the squirrel as he tapped the walnut shell with his knuckles. He cocked his head to one side, listening intently. Then suddenly he threw the nut over his shoulder into a large hole in the floor. "Hey, Daddy!" shouted Veruca Salt suddenly. "I've decided I want a squirrel. All I've got at home is 2 dogs and 4 cats and 6 bunny rabbits and 2 parakeets and 3 canaries and a green parrot and a turtle and a bowl of goldfish and a cage of white mice and a silly old hamster. I want a squirrel." "All right, my pet," Mr. Salt said soothingly. "Daddy'll get you a squirrel just as soon as he possibly can." "But I don't want any old squirrel," Veruca shouted. "I want a trained squirrel." "She can't have one," said Mr. Wonka. "Who says I can't?" shouted Veruca. "I'm going in to grab me a squirrel this very minute." "Don't," said Mr. Wonka. But he was too late. The girl had already thrown open the door and rushed in. The moment she entered the room, 100 squirrels stopped what they were doing and turned their heads and stared at her with small, black, beady eyes. Veruca reached out to grab the nearest squirrel. But as she did so, every single squirrel around the table took a flying leap towards her and landed on her body. 25 of them caught hold of her right arm and pinned it down. 25 caught hold of her right leg and anchored it to the ground. 24 caught hold of her left leg. And the one remaining squirrel, obviously the leader of them all, climbed up onto her shoulder and started tapping the wretched girl's head with its knuckles. "Save her," screamed Mrs. Salt. "Faruka, come back. What are they doing to her?" "They're testing her to see if she's a bad nut," said Mr. Wonka. "You watch." Faruka struggled furiously, but the squirrels held her tight, and the one on her shoulders went on tapping the side of her head with his knuckles. Then all at once, the squirrels pulled Faruka to the ground and started carrying her across the floor. "My goodness, she is a bad nut after all," said Mr. Wonka. "Her head must have sounded completely hollow." Faruka kicked and screamed, but it was no use. "Where are they taking her?" shrieked Mrs. Salt. "She's going where all the other bad nuts go," said Mr. Willy Wonka. "Down the garbage chute." "By golly, she is going down the chute," said Mr. Salt, staring through the glass door at his daughter. "Then save her," cried Mrs. Salt. "Too late," said Mr. Wonka. "She's gone." And indeed she had. "But where?" shrieked Mrs. Salt, flapping her arms. "What happens to the bad nuts? Where does the chute go to?" "To the furnace, of course," Mr. Wonka said. "To the incinerator." Mrs. Salt opened her huge red mouth and started to scream. "Don't worry," said Mr. Wonka. "They only light it every other day. And there's always a chance, you know." "A chance," yelled Mrs. Salt. "My darling Faruka, she'll be sizzled like a sausage." "She'll be fried like a fritter," cried Mr. Salt. "Oh, don't be cross, my dear sir," said Mr. Wonka. "She's probably stuck just below the entrance hole. And if that's the case, all you have to do is go in and pull her up again." Hearing this, both Mr. and Mrs. Salt dashed into the nut room and ran over to the hole in the floor and peered in. "Faruka," shouted Mrs. Salt. "Are you down there?" There was no answer. Mrs. Salt bent further forward to get a closer look down the hole, and her enormous behind was sticking up in the air like a giant mushroom. It was a dangerous position to be in. She needed only one tiny little push. And that is exactly what the squirrels gave her. Over she toppled into the hole head first, screeching like a parrot. "Good gracious me," said Mr. Salt, as he watched his fat wife go tumbling down the hole. "What a lot of garbage there's going to be today." "What's it like down there, Angina?" he called out. He leaned further forward. The squirrels rushed up behind him. "Help!" he shouted. But he was already toppling forward, and down the chute he went just as his wife had done before him and his daughter. From far away along the corridor came the beating of drums. Then the singing began again. "Faruka Salt," sang the Oompa Loompas. "Faruka Salt, the little brute, has just gone down the garbage chute. And as we very rightly thought that in a case like this we ought to see the thing completely through, we've polished off her parents, too. Down goes Faruka, down the drain, and here perhaps we should explain that she will meet as she descends a rather different set of friends to those that she has left behind. These won't be nearly so refined. A fish head, for example, cut this morning from a halibut. Hello, good morning, how do you do? How nice to meet you, how are you? A bacon rind, some rancid lard, a loaf of bread gone stale and hard, a steak that nobody could chew, an oyster from an oyster stew, and lots of other things as well, each with a rather horrid smell. These are Varuka's newfound friends that she will meet as she descends, and this is the price she has to pay for going so very far astray. But now, my dears, we think you might be wondering, is it really right that every single bit of blame and all the scolding and the shame should fall upon Faruka Salt? Is she the only one at fault? For though she's spoiled, and dreadfully so, a girl can't spoil herself, you know. Who spoiled her, then? Ah, who indeed? Who pandered to her every need? Who turned her into such a brat? Who are the culprits? Who did that? Alas, you needn't look so far to find out who these sinners are. They are, and this is very sad, her loving parents, Mum and Dad. And that is why we're glad they fell into the garbage chute as well. Mr. Wonka looked at the little group that stood beside him in the corridor. There were only two children left now, Mike TV and Charlie Bucket. And there were three grown-ups, Mr. and Mrs. TV and Grandpa Joe. Come along, said Mr. Wonka, we shall now take the elevator. He skipped across the passage to a pair of double doors. The doors slid open. The two children and the grown-ups went in. Now then, cried Mr. Wonka, which button shall we press first? Take your pick. Charlie Bucket stared around him in astonishment. This was the craziest elevator he had ever seen. There were buttons everywhere. The walls and even the ceiling were covered all over with rows and rows and rows of small black push buttons. Charlie started reading some of the labels alongside the buttons. Exploding candy for your enemies, it said on one. Then luminous lollies for eating in bed at night. Mint jujus for the boy next door. They'll give him green teeth for a month. Cavity-filling caramels, no more dentists. Stick jaw for talkative parents. Invisible chocolate bars for eating in class. Rainbow drops, suck them, and you can spit in 6 different colours. Come along, come along, cried Mr. Wonka. We can't wait all day. Isn't there a television room in all this lot? Asked Mike TV. Certainly there's a television room, Mr. Wonka said. That button over there. That's for me, shouted Mike TV. He stuck out his thumb and pressed the button. Instantly, there was a tremendous whizzing noise. The doors clanged shut and the elevator leapt away as though it had been stung by a wasp. Up and up it rushed, then it changed direction and went sideways. Then it turned corners, it went down, then up again, and suddenly there was a screaming of brakes and the elevator stopped. We're there, said Mr. Wonka. This, my friends, is the television chocolate room. Come in, please. This, cried Mr. Wonka, hopping up and down with excitement, is my very latest and greatest invention, television chocolate. Let me explain. The first time I saw ordinary television working, I was struck by a tremendous idea. Look here, I shouted. If these people can break up a photograph into millions of pieces and send the pieces whizzing through the air and then put them together again at the other end, why can't I do the same thing with a bar of chocolate? Why can't I send a real bar of chocolate whizzing through the air in tiny pieces and then put the pieces together at the other end all ready to be eaten? Impossible, said Mike TV. You think so, said Mr. Wonka? Well, watch this. I shall now send a bar of my very best chocolate from one end of this room to the other by television. Get ready there. Bring in the chocolate. Immediately, 6 Oompa Loompas marched forward carrying on their shoulders the most enormous bar of chocolate Charlie had ever seen. It was about the size of the mattress he slept on at home. It has to be big, Mr. Wonka explained, because whenever you send something by television, it always comes out much smaller at the other end. Even with ordinary television, when you photograph a big man, he never comes out on your screen any taller than a pencil, does he? Here we go, then. Get ready. One of the Oompa Loompas caught hold of a large switch and pulled it down. There was a blinding flash. The chocolate's gone, shouted Grandpa Joe, waving his arms. He was quite right. The whole enormous bar of chocolate had disappeared completely into thin air. It's on its way, cried Mr. Wonka. It is now rushing through the air above our heads in a million tiny pieces. Quick, come over here. He dashed over to the other end of the room where the television set was standing, and the others followed him. Watch the screen, he cried. Here it comes, look. The screen flickered and lit up. Then suddenly a small bar of chocolate appeared in the middle of the screen. Charlie Bucket, cried Mr. Wonka, you take it. Reach out and grab it. Charlie put out his hand and touched the screen, and suddenly, miraculously, the bar of chocolate came away in his fingers. He was so surprised he nearly dropped it. Eat it, shouted Mr. Wonka. Go on and eat it. It'll be delicious. It's the same bar. It's gotten smaller on the journey, that's all. It's absolutely fantastic, gasped Grandpa Joe. It's a miracle. Mr. Wonka, shouted Mike TV, could you send a real live person from one place to another in the same way? Good heavens, child, I really don't know, said Mr. Wonka. I suppose you could. I wouldn't like to risk it, though. It might have some very nasty results. But Mike TV was already off and running. He was running towards the other end of the room where the great camera was standing. Look at me, he shouted. I'm going to be the first person in the world to be sent by television. No, 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 cried Mr. Wonka. Mike, screamed Mrs. TV. Stop, come back. You'll be turned into a million tiny pieces. But there was no stopping Mike TV now. The crazy boy rushed on, and when he reached the enormous camera, he jumped straight for the switch, scattering Oompa Loompas right and left as he went. There was a blinding flash. Then there was silence. He's gone, screamed Mrs. TV. He's disappeared. Great heavens, he has gone, shouted Mr. TV. Mike, screamed Mrs. TV, where are you? I'll tell you where he is, said Mr. TV. He's whizzing around above our heads in a million tiny pieces. We must watch the television set, said Mr. Wonka. He may come through any moment. Mr. and Mrs. TV and Grandpa Joe and Little Charlie and Mr. Wonka all gathered round the television set and stared tensely at the screen. Something's happening. The screen had suddenly begun to flicker. Here he comes, yelled Mr. Wonka. Yes, that's him all right. But he's a midget, shouted Mr. TV. Mike, cried Mrs. TV, are you all right? Are there any bits of you missing? Isn't he going to get any bigger, shouted Mr. TV. Talk to me, Mike, cried Mrs. TV. Say something. Tell me you're all right. A tiny voice, no louder than the squeaking of a mouse, came out of the television set. Hi, Mum, it said. Hi, Pop, look at me. I'm the first person ever to be sent by television. Grab him, ordered Mr. Wonka. Quick. Mrs. TV shot out a hand and picked the tiny figure of Mike TV out of the screen. He was certainly not more than an inch tall. He's shrunk, said Mr. TV. Of course he's shrunk, said Mr. Wonka. What do you expect? Oh, Mr. Wonka, wailed Mrs. TV, how can we make him grow? Well, said Mr. Wonka, stroking his beard and gazing thoughtfully at the ceiling. As luck would have it, small boys are extremely springy and elastic. They stretch like mad. So what we'll do, we'll put him in a special machine I have for testing the stretchiness of chewing gum. Maybe that will bring him back to what he was. Oh, thank you, said Mrs. TV. Mr. Wonka clicked his fingers. An Oompa Loompa appeared immediately and stood beside him. "Follow these orders," said Mr. Wonka, handing the Oompa Loompa a piece of paper. "Off you go. Goodbye, Mr. TV. Goodbye, Mrs. TV. And please don't look so worried. They all come out in the wash, you know, every one of them." At the end of the room, the Oompa Loompas around the giant camera were already beating their tiny drums and beginning to jog up and down to the rhythm. "There they go again," said Mr. Wonka. "I'm afraid you can't stop them singing." Little Charlie caught Grandpa Joe's hand, and the two of them stood beside Mr. Wonka in the middle of the long, bright room, listening to the Oompa Loompas, and this is what they sang. "The most important thing we've learned, so far as children are concerned, is never, never, never let them near your television set. Or better still, just don't install the idiotic thing at all. In almost every house we've been, we've watched them gaping at the screen. They loll and slop and lounge about and stare until their eyes pop out. Last week, in someone's place, we saw a dozen eyeballs on the floor. They sit and stare and stare and sit until they're hypnotized by it, until they're absolutely drunk with all that shocking, ghastly junk. Oh, yes, we know it keeps them still. They don't climb out the windowsill. They never fight or kick or punch. They leave you free to cook the lunch and wash the dishes in the sink. But did you ever stop to think, to wonder just exactly what this does to your beloved tot? It rots the senses in the head. It kills imagination dead. It clogs and clutters up the mind. It makes a child so dull and blind, he can no longer understand a fantasy, a fairyland. His brain becomes as soft as cheese. His powers of thinking rust and freeze. He cannot think. He only sees. All right, you'll cry. All right, you'll say. But if we take the set away, what shall we do to entertain our darling children? Please explain. We'll answer this by asking you, what used the darling ones to do? How used they keep themselves contented before this monster was invented? Have you forgotten? Don't you know? We'll say it very loud and slow. They used to read. They'd read and read and then proceed to read some more. Great Scott, gadzooks, one half their lives was reading books. The nursery shelves held books galore. Books cluttered up the nursery floor, and in the bedroom by the bed, more books were waiting to be read. The younger ones had Beatrix Potter with Mr. Todd, the dirty rotter, and Squirrel Nutkin, Pigling Bland, and Mrs. Tiggy Winkle, and just how the camel got his hump, and how the monkey lost his rump, and Mr. Toad, and bless my soul, there's Mr. Rat and Mr. Mole. Oh, books, what books they used to know, those children living long ago. So please, oh please, we beg, we pray, go throw your TV set away, and in its place you can install a lovely bookshelf on the wall. Then fill the shelves with lots of books, ignoring all the dirty looks, the screams and yells, the bites and kicks, and children hitting you with sticks. Fear not, because we promise you that in about a week or two of having nothing else to do, they'll now begin to feel the need of having something good to read. And once they start, oh boy, you watch the slowly growing joy that fills their hearts. They'll grow so keen, they'll wonder what they'd ever seen in that ridiculous machine, that nauseating, foul, unclean, repulsive television screen. And later, each and every kid will love you more for what you did. P.S. Regarding Mike TV, we very much regret that we shall simply have to wait and see if we can get him back his height. But if we can't, it serves him right. Which room shall it be next? Said Mr. Wonka as he turned away and darted into the elevator. Come on, hurry up, we must get going, and how many children are there left now? Little Charlie looked at Grandpa Joe, and Grandpa Joe looked back at Little Charlie. But Mr. Wonka, Grandpa Joe called after him, there's only Charlie left now. Mr. Wonka swung round and stared at Charlie. There was a silence. Charlie stood there holding tightly onto Grandpa Joe's hand. You mean you're the only one left, Mr. Wonka said, pretending to be surprised. Why, yes, whispered Charlie, yes. Mr. Wonka suddenly exploded with excitement. But my dear boy, he cried out, that means you've won. He rushed out of the elevator and started shaking Charlie's hand so furiously it nearly came off. Oh, I do congratulate you, he cried. I really do. I'm absolutely delighted. It couldn't be better. How wonderful this is. Jump into the elevator, my dear boy. Jump in. You too, Grandpa Joe, sir. No, after you. That's the way. And this time I shall choose the button we are going to press. Mr. Bonker's bright, twinkling blue eyes rested a moment on Charlie's face. Something crazy is going to happen now, Charlie thought. But he wasn't frightened. He wasn't even nervous. He was just terrifically excited. And so was Grandpa Joe. The old man's face was shining with excitement as he watched every move that Mr. Wonka made. Mr. Wonka was reaching for a button high up on the glass ceiling of the elevator. Charlie and Grandpa Joe both craned their necks to read what it said on the little label beside the button. It said, "Up and out." "Up and out," thought Charlie. "What sort of a room is that?" Mr. Wonka pressed the button. The glass doors closed. "Hold on," cried Mr. Wonka. Then, wham, the elevator shot straight up like a rocket. "Yippee," shouted Grandpa Joe. Charlie was clinging to Grandpa Joe's legs, and Mr. Wonka was holding onto a strap from the ceiling. And up they went, up, 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 straight up this time, with no twistings or turnings. And Charlie could hear the whistling of the air outside as the elevator went faster and faster. "Yippee," shouted Grandpa Joe. "Yippee, here we go." "Faster," cried Mr. Wonka, banging the wall of the elevator with his hand. "Faster, faster. If we don't go any faster than this, we shall never get through." "Through what?" shouted Grandpa Joe. "What do we have to get through?" "Ha-ha," cried Mr. Wonka. "You wait and see. I've been longing to press this button for years, but I've never done it until now. I couldn't bear the thought of making a great big hole in the roof of the factory." "Here we go, boys, up and out." "But you don't mean," said Grandpa Joe, "you don't really mean that this elevator..." "Oh, yes, I do," answered Mr. Wonka. "You wait and see. Up and out." Then suddenly, crash! And the most tremendous noise of splintering wood and broken tiles came from directly above their heads. And Grandpa Joe shouted, "Help! It's the end! We're done for!" In 5 seconds, they were 1,000 feet up in the sky. Mr. Wonka pressed another button. The elevator stopped. It stopped and hung in midair, hovering like a helicopter over the great chocolate factory below. "How I love my chocolate factory," said Mr. Wonka, gazing down. Then he paused, and he turned around and looked at Charlie with a most serious expression on his face. "Do you love it too, Charlie?" he asked. "I think it's the most wonderful place in the whole world," said Charlie. "I am very pleased to hear you say that," said Mr. Wonka, looking more serious than ever. He went on staring at Charlie. "Yes," he said, "I am very pleased indeed to hear you say that, and now I shall tell you why." Mr. Wonka cocked his head to one side, and all at once the tiny twinkling wrinkles of a smile appeared around the corners of his eyes, and he said, "You see, my dear boy, I have decided to make you a present of the whole place. As soon as you are old enough to run it, the entire factory will become yours." Charlie stared at Mr. Wonka. Grandpa Joe opened his mouth to speak, but no words came out. "It's quite true," Mr. Wonka said, smiling broadly now. "I really am giving it to you. That's all right, isn't it?" "Giving it to him?" gasped Grandpa Joe. "You must be joking." "I'm not joking, sir. I'm deadly serious." But why should you want to give your factory to little Charlie?" "Listen," Mr. Wonka said, "I am an old man. I'm much older than you think. I can't go on forever. I've got no children of my own, no family at all. So who is going to run the factory when I get too old to do it myself? Someone's got to keep it going, if only for the sake of the Oompa Loompas. Mind you, there are thousands of clever men who would give anything for a chance to come in and take over from me. But I don't want that sort of person. I don't want a grown-up person at all. A grown-up won't listen to me. He won't learn. He will try to do things his own way and not mine. So I have to have a child. I want a good, sensible, loving child. One to whom I can tell all my most precious candy-making secrets while I am still alive." "So that is why you sent out the golden tickets," cried Charlie. "Exactly," said Mr. Wonka. "I decided to invite 5 children to the factory, and the one I liked best at the end of the day would be the winner." "But, Mr. Wonka," stammered Grandpa Joe. "There's no time for arguments," cried Mr. Wonka. "We must go at once and fetch the rest of the family, Charlie's father and his mother and anyone else that's around. They can all live in the factory from now on. They can all help to run it until Charlie's old enough to do it by himself. Where do you live, Charlie?" Charlie peered down through the glass elevator at the snow-covered houses that lay below. "It's over there," he said, pointing. "It's that little cottage right on the edge of the town. The tiny little one." "I see it," cried Mr. Wonka, and he pressed some more buttons and the elevator shot down toward Charlie's house. Crash went the elevator, right down through the roof of the house into the old people's bedroom. Showers of dust and broken tiles and bits of wood and cockroaches and spiders and bricks and cement went raining down on the 3 old ones who were lying in bed. And each of them thought that the end of the world was come. Grandma Georgina fainted. Grandma Josephine dropped her false teeth. Grandpa George put his head under the blanket, and Mr. and Mrs. Bucket came rushing in from the next room. "Save us!" cried Grandma Josephine. "Calm yourself, my darling wife," said Grandpa Joe, stepping out of the elevator. "It's only us." "Mother!" cried Charlie, rushing into Mrs. Bucket's arms. "Mother, mother, listen to what's happened. We're all going back to live in Mr. Wonka's factory, and we're going to help him run it, and he's given it all to me, and... "What are you talking about?" said Mrs. Bucket. "Just look at our house," cried poor Mr. Bucket. "It's in ruins." "My dear sir," said Mr. Wonka, jumping forward and shaking Mr. Bucket warmly by the hand, "I am so very glad to meet you. You mustn't worry about your house. From now on, you're never going to need it again, anyway." "Who is this crazy man?" screamed Grandma Josephine. "He could have killed us all." "This," said Grandpa Joe, "is Mr. Willy Wonka himself." It took quite a time for Grandpa Joe and Charlie to explain to everyone exactly what had been happening to them all day, and even then they all refused to ride back to the factory in the elevator. "I'd rather die in my bed," shouted Grandma Josephine. "So would I," cried Grandma Georgina. "I refuse to go," announced Grandpa George. So Mr. Wonka and Grandpa Joe and Charlie, taking no notice of their screams, simply pushed the bed into the elevator. They pushed Mr. and Mrs. Bucket in after it. Then they got in themselves. Mr. Wonka pressed a button. The doors closed. Grandma Georgina screamed. And the elevator rose up off the floor and shot through the hole in the roof, out into the open sky. Charlie climbed onto the bed and tried to calm the three old people who were still petrified with fear. "Please don't be frightened," he said. "It's quite safe. And we're going to the most wonderful place in the world." "Charlie's right," said Grandpa Joe. "Will there be anything to eat when we get there?" asked Grandma Josephine. "I'm starving. The whole family is starving." "Anything to eat?" cried Charlie, laughing. "Oh, you just wait and see."